Yep. All right. It is now 7 o'clock. We will call to order this meeting of the Village of River Forest Sustainability Commission. Co-chair Charette.
Yes, here, present.
Co-chair Lennon.
Yes.
Commissioner Vesey.
Yes.
Commissioner Haley.
Yes.
Commissioner Mezzatesta.
Yes.
Commissioner Kedlick. Commissioner Avalos. Student Commissioner Steerwalt. All right, we have six voting members present. We do have a quorum. First order of business is public comment. We do have one individual here in person. It's Eric Simon, correct? Is that? Yeah, so obviously we've had some changes to the makeup of the commission since last meeting, and our former co-chair is here in the audience, and we'll have have him kick it off.
Hi, Eric Simon, 843 Keystone. I want to make some comments on every single thing this commission does. No, I'm just kidding. All those changes that I think you guys will go over here in a sec all happened very quickly. So I just wanted to, you know, obviously I wanted to come to the first meeting where I'm not sitting where you guys are sitting and say hello and say goodbye. So I joined the commission in May of 2017. That's when we were formed. So it's been a little over 7 years. And it was a great run. And it's really fun being on this commission. And I really just appreciate everything that we do. If you ask village staff, we actually get a lot done compared to other colleagues on other commissions, which is really great. And I think that's like should be a pride of this commission, as well as kind of what we strive to do is actually get a lot of work done and make sure that it's valuable, that it really meets our goals of sustainability. And I think the focus that Susan has brought and that now Gary in the co-chair position is going to help with the rest of you guys is going to be awesome. So I don't want to take up a lot of your time, but just to tell you that I'm not going anywhere. I am now a trustee servant, community member of this commission, and I plan on staying involved and helping in any way I can. So Ben, welcome. We're psyched to have you. You have an awesome background, and it was not hard to pick your name out of the list of potential people. And Manolo is going to be awesome as a voting commissioner too. So this is a great group. And I know you guys are going to, you know, carry forward the great traditions that we've had over the last 7+ years. So I'm sorry I won't be sitting where you guys are sitting, but I'm looking forward to participating in a different way. So thank you guys all for carrying on the great work.
So I just wanted to take, you can stand or sit, whatever you're more comfortable doing, but I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank Eric for his service. As he said, he joined in May 9th. He had lived in the village less than 2 years when he joined, which is, you know, different than most people. He had two relatively young daughters at the time. I went back and listened to the first meeting today, and his first recorded comment was, and you were like, push it on. That was very helpful and has been helpful throughout these 7 years. But he's distinguished himself in many ways. And one is at the 2-year mark when I joined, there were only two of the original commissioners still on. So, you know, it's a 4-year term. It's relatively rare that somebody fulfills the first four. And you know, Eric went far beyond that. He also the commission was much less diverse when he added. He was the only male on the commission, so he is, and the other members were less diverse than what we have today. Less diverse in terms of age, less diverse in terms of, you know, housing situations, and so I think he's done a really good job of bringing in more people, and I think that gives us the greatest chance of reaching out to the community when we're, you know, we have younger people now. And so, you know, that's all, I think, a tribute to him. So thank you for your service.
Give him a round. Yes.
You didn't have to do a second.
Thank you, Eric.
Continue to draw on your expertise. So I guess I should end with just a personal one, that often in meetings, You know, I think one of the tough things about this commission, I'm sure this is true of all commissions, but maybe even more so in this one, is there's so much, you know, sort of institutional knowledge and decisions that we made and remembering it. And there's so many meetings that I just looked over at Eric and we kind of helped recollect together what had happened. And so I'm going to miss that. So anyways, but you have more than done your duty. So you can go.
I would just like to note Commissioner Avalos is now attending via Zoom. Manolo, sorry, I had some issues trying to admit you to the meeting room. Just for your reminder, you can listen in, comment in, but you can't vote. So the only real voting thing now is the adoption of the meeting minutes. Did anybody have any corrections, clarifications they wanted to make to last month's minutes? Yep.
So, we can talk about this later on, but on the landscaping, on the comments on landscaping, this is not so much a comment on the minutes as I did some fact checking, and so we can revisit that. But what you recorded is what happened, so there's no correction. But you know, just in terms of that, and the only comment is on page 5. This is in comments that I made, first paragraph. It says grown and it should say grow. And without that, that's it.
Thank you for that correction. With the typo correction, do we have a motion to adopt the meeting minutes from the June 11th meeting?
I so move.
Commissioner Mezzatesta, do we have a second?
I'll second.
Commissioner Vizi, Co-Chair Charette?
Yes.
Co-Chair Lennon?
Yes.
Commissioner Vizi?
Yes.
Commissioner Haley?
Yes.
Commissioner Mezzatesta?
Yes.
Commissioner Kadlec?
Yes.
6-0, the minutes are adopted. All right. Moving on to the continued leaf blower ordinance discussion. So had some robust feedback from the in-person comment last time around. I did share the results sort of compiled of the yes-no questions of the surveyor in the meeting packet, and then I did share the sort of individual written responses from the various landscape commissioners who this was sent out to. There was one public individual I think it was pretty easy to pick out amidst that, and they had emailed me shortly afterwards. So just wanted to share that with you all and then open it up for discussion. Where we go from here.
Anybody? Okay. I have a few comments. I guess going into this, I was a little surprised at the feedback because I thought these companies are going to have to adjust for Oak Park. And so, you know, we're just sort of on their tails. And so what was revealed, I think, was that I don't think we can assume that. So we have to act independently. And, you know, I went on a little walk today to clear my mind. And I thought, you know, the village of Oak Park often does things that pisses people off. And I think we can take a different approach because we want to get more work done. And so I think we're going to be more successful if we lead people instead of, you know, sort of shove them. So I had some suggestions. It's a slower adoption time. It's sort of along the same lines of the composting, which is this is still where we want to go, but maybe adopting the time frame of Oak Park was overly ambitious and, you know, not taking into account. So this is my suggestion. It's just a starting point, and I hope people will run with it. But Manolo suggested last time that we take an incentivized approach as opposed to a punitive one. And so what I was thinking is that we could begin by waiving the village license fees for landscapers who commit to transitioning to electric leaf blowers. As Seth pointed out last time, many of them operate also as snow removal.
Snow removal, yes.
So I defer to the village in terms of, you know, if they just want to do it on that portion or not. And, you know, we discussed last time that, you know, the electric vehicle charger is generating some income. I don't imagine this is going to be a huge impact on the budget in terms of lost fees, but that's sort of a starting point. So that's number one. Number two, we create a spot on the village website so that residents who are interested in hiring companies that use electric leaf blowers have a way of accessing them. And I don't think this will be an empty set, because some of these companies are going to have to do it anyways for Oak Park. And so I think by directing people, and, you know, we're a sustainability commission, so we're focused on the environmental issue. But a lot of people are very upset at the noise component of this. And so, you know, I think people wanting to be good neighbors, it might do it. And then I just also think that in order to avoid the incentive to say, oh, yeah, we're going to use electric leaf blowers and not comply, that we have a fine equal to 2x the licensing fee if someone is found not to be complying. And I think having directing residents there will be a good way that people can report back and say, like, hey, I hired this company and they came out and used gas blowers. And so then, boom, you hit them with like a 2x the license. Because if you just find the licensing fee, then they're like, well, we may as well try. And if we don't get away with it, then. So that was sort of a starting point. And then, but I think also there should be like a notice to them that this is something that's coming. So they would be, you know, well advised to adapt and do it. And then I also thought maybe we could brainstorm, maybe if not at this meeting, in the future, ways that we could help them adopt. Seth did mention last time that there's a Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus grant that's out there. But, you know, maybe also Seth shared with me that the village is slowly transitioning as they need new equipment. So if there was a way to incorporate into that, you know, if we put out an RFP that I don't know if this is done, but like individual landscapers could participate in that. And, particularly if they're an early adapter and maybe have an opportunity to get some of this equipment at a lower fee. I did fact check. You know, I think the person who said it's $2,500, that's very overstated in terms of it's definitely more than a gas blower. But it's, I think that's overstated. And
did you factor in the batteries though?
Yeah. Yeah.
Multiple batteries.
It's closer to 1,000. And of all the complaints, you know, I spoke to the Forest Preserve of Cook County has converted over to all electric powered. And so one thing, specifically I spoke to Adam Kessler, who's the director at Trailside. And so what they're using is a company called Stihl, STIHL. And the reason they're using that is because they have multiple electric powered equipment and the battery is common. I don't know, is the village doing the same?
That's who the village uses for all of our equipment.
Right. So you have one battery charger and you can charge all the different things. So while you're using one leaf blower, you can be, you know, charging a leaf blower. And if they choose to, you know, expand that to other things, which once you have the charger, and the batteries really brings down the cost of it. And, you know, so I think anything we can do to help, you know, especially the smaller contractors to incorporate this, we should try to do, and we can continue, you know, I don't think we can come up with all those ideas tonight, but at least adopt that approach. And then agree that we're going to revisit this in 1 year. And, you know, so that the issue is live and there's still an incentive to adapt.
I guess I'd like to, explore some of the other problems that they talked about, you know, for instance, using it in the rain or, you know, that being dangerous and so on. What
I spoke to Adam about that. He said this equipment is rain resistant. And, I have to say, I observe very few landscapers out in downpours who are using leaf blowers. I don't know what your experience is with that. So I thought that, you know, I kind of passed along each of the comments. And I think the one that has the most merit is the charging, that once you're out on the road. But he said that, the Forest Preserve does have crews that go out and they have found a way to manage that. So, I think that's something that if we gave them a year, maybe it seems like a problem they would be better suited to come up with a solution than us. But just say, you know, you got to figure this out. Like it could be having somewhere in the village that they are able to, you know, much like our EV charger, that they're able to power.
That's a good idea.
That was one of Adam's ideas. But, you know, again, it would take a rethinking of things. And my other comment is that, so one of the landscapers that spoke talked about the noise and how the leaf blowers operate at two different levels. And, you know, again, I get myself all involved when I see the gardening people. And I mean, they are not operating at this lower level. So, I mean, I think that's another thing. It's maybe that would be more along the lines of a suggestion, but they could say like, look, when you're out there, you know, this time of year and you've just got grass clippings, they don't mean to be going at full halt because that's really pissing people off. And so I don't know how you enforce that.
Yeah. Yeah. And conceptually, I totally agree with you. There are some differences. Obviously, if you are in a forest preserve you're pretty well self-contained, right? So you've got someplace like the village, you've got their maintenance hall and all that, and they can circuit. These guys circuit it throughout the whole city. So it's a little bit different, and they're going to have to, and I'd be surprised if the backpacks don't cost $2,500. You might, a lawnmower cost that they could never use, it wouldn't last, would cost $500, and the battery's like 80% of that. So anyhow, I agree with the rethinking. I think the rethinking, to Lisa's point, needs to come from them. I agree that we should delay with a date, maybe call it a soft date. You know, one of the respondents, you know, that Seth put out said that what they turn their equipment every 4 years or something like that. So if we put something out there that within that amount of time or 3 years or whatever, then they have that capability that eliminates that problem. I had a pretty good alleyway discussion with Mr. Kelty, you know, about two days after. And one, I think he was, I don't want to speak for him. I think he was happy that we did what we did. He felt that Oak Park just kind of thrust the thing out there and didn't really give them an opportunity to voice. And they also included string trimmers in theirs, which I don't think we had in ours. But he did say that he does see it as a workable solution to have, you know, during the heavy seasons of fall and spring, use the gas, but then electrical in between. He thought that people could work through that. But at the same token, I think we need to cadence that along with what equipment availability they have. Just as a side, I was walking the dogs. I walk all over, as I keep telling people. I was in Oak Park a couple of weeks ago, and guy out there with his blower, contractor, on a Sunday, which probably a no-no, but he did have it tuned down, which something we haven't heard here. So that's the kind of thing. We could probably put something like that even there now. Okay, we aren't going to ask you to get rid of them now, but at least during the non-heavy seasons, you need to run those at that lower rate. So I think there's things we can put out there. I continued to prompt him, and he said, yeah, okay, he can get with McNabb, and these are your good buddies, and, you know, come up with a proposal to help guide us. I said, that's what you can do. You can help guide us. You know where it's going. And he actually agrees. You know, he says, hey, I got my lake property. I don't like hearing those things buzz around when I'm doing up there either. So he does understand. It's just a matter of laying out a legitimate plan that everybody can accept and work with. So in addition to what you're saying, I think maybe we could draft, and you got some pretty good starting points there, I think, Susan, just kind of put those things down and then give it to Kelty and McNabb to somewhat go and fill out some of the blanks themselves. And I told them, do it within the context of, you have some little guys too, you aren't going to set it up so you two can just run them out of business. But, you know, so they do capture that aspect of it. He said he would, but he's not necessarily, I think, real comfortable doing those types of things as well as presenting. So I'm more than happy to kind of help facilitate it if that's appropriate. Yeah. Yeah, just set them up and kind of get them on board as a little subgroup, if you would, to help with some of this stuff. So first is this, and we can start to move into some other things as the technology allows. So that's my thinking, which, you know, just kind of an overlay on top of some of the things you came up with as well, Susan.
The one thing that what came to thought, just reading all of these comments, is kind of longer term, how we're all of these vendors or the people that are these companies, they're going to have these dead batteries. And I feel like they're just going to toss them in the trash. You know, could we possibly incorporate some type of incentive program? If you turn them into the village, you can have, you know, $5 credit or something like that. Because I think that will be a problem longer term. I don't know how focused they are with the recycling program of these batteries that are going to run out of life eventually.
I think, I think generally agree with kind of the approach you guys are talking about. I think a few key items I think I would see is, like, if there's a date at which we're revisiting it, I think we should try and have some tangible progress before then, whether that's like maybe if we have some money available picking. I mean, I read through the comments and I got the impression that we could have the same conversation in a year and we would get the exact same responses based on, I mean, 70% of them said they were not interested in resources from the village or information about it. So I think there's a high level of skepticism there. And I think I'd rather make sure we're doing something that's facilitating, like getting information, getting hard information, like having a trial, having maybe selecting, offering a grant or a partnership with somebody who's willing to try it, where, you know, we can talk in a year of like, well, how did it go? Like, talk to the crew and use that information, like firsthand information, versus kind of trying to have a similar argument where people are citing experiences in Oak Park or Evanston or things they read online. So I don't know exactly how to do that. I would just like to, as best we can, use the time, if we're going to revisit it, you know, next spring or something, as figure out a way we can use this time between now and then to help ourselves make a decision.
Well, I mean, there are going to be companies that adopt it. You know, I'm sure Kelty McAdams are among them, because they work in Oak Park. I can't see them pulling out of mm-hmm. Oak Park. So again, I think if we could form some kind of a focus group and work with them, and maybe, you know, maybe bring them back next year as, you know, as in, instead of our uninformed views, like they could talk about how they did it and, you know, brands they used and the way that they made it cost effective, because there are going to be companies that adopt it. And so we just want to, you know, I just thought if we could direct residents to them so they have a way to find them, if that was of interest to them, that, you know, that's sort of the basis of my comments.
Yeah. I mean, there's going to be some higher technology issues, which affect it, you know. So they're going to be able to do this year round at some point in time. The answer is yes, but when that is, I don't think anybody can guess right now. But I do think we can put some hard dates down that we would say, okay, 3 years from this date, during these months, it's electric only. Now you're giving them the opportunity to plan for it. They're not going to be taking their current assets and just tossing them, and you can measure and monitor that. But I like your idea too of, okay, let's get somebody who's starting to do it earlier so we can learn from it and determine, okay, how far can you push it? You know, how, you know, what is a legitimate time frame? But I think we have to have at least some date that sets a target. Otherwise, it just drifts and drifts and drifts. And I think that's what you're getting to, Jeff. And that becomes what drives the urgency to get things done. But I do think it needs to be tied to their equipment, and they say 4 years. Okay, so I doubt if anybody, maybe somebody bought a whole bunch of new stuff this year, but we could say count this year as one, and then 3 years out, there it is. And this is our plan, and we can sit down with, you know, Kelty and McNabb, and they wonder if they can reel in a couple more and start to say, okay, how would you do this? What's it going to look like? How do we get somebody off the ground early so we can see how it works, that type of thing, and start to fold in some of these other notions that Sue had and that you brought up, Jeff. That'd be kind of how I look at it. But yeah, there needs to be a date.
I think another item too, I guess I'm interested in, or maybe this is like a known, but like we talk about there's noise and there's pollution and there's probably like particulate they're blowing up into the air unnecessarily. But I guess I would presume under our purview as a sustainability commission could still consider noise levels to be like a reason to make a decision. It doesn't have to purely be some basis of, you know, a decrease in air quality. So I don't know if everyone's on the same page or if we really should be more narrowly focused, but I feel like some of the comments I think last month kind of, I don't know, there's, I'm not sure if everyone's comfortable we're viewing it from both sides, or if we're really sticking to like a just looking at the air pollution. Yeah.
Well, it seems like the noise to me is like a secondary factor. You know, if the electric equipment is truly quieter, that's a benefit. But I don't know about trying to sell it that way to people.
I would say the majority of the calls and inquiries I've gotten from residents on this issue are noise related rather than pollution related.
Oh, I'm not surprised. Yeah. because I can, when McAdam is cleaning the backside of Windsor House, which is right next to me, I'm across the alley from them. Yeah, it's, and I've got really good windows that block out sound and I can hear it. And it is annoying. I agree. And that probably is the primary complaint. But is that our, is that our issue? You know what I'm saying? I think we primarily need to concentrate on the sustainability.
I would say yes. I mean, sustainability isn't just CO2. I mean, it's pollution, and that's noise pollution, right? So it's a form of, I think it should all still be a part of our thought process as we do these things. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I think the noise is like a very important aspect, I think, especially to citizens, because I saw in some of the surveys, companies were saying, you know, prices are going to increase with all this new equipment. And I think, you know, I'd be curious to know what citizens would maybe more like be more open to increased costs if it meant things were going to be quieter rather than just because it's the sustainable thing to do. So I'd be curious to hear about that as well.
You know, I was also thinking about the cost because that was obviously brought up. And the great majority of a landscaper's cost is the labor, not an equipment that you buy and use for 4 years. So if you amortize this over 4 years and all of your clients, you're talking a very small amount of money. I mean, increase the cost of the business, but it's pretty negligible. And we've sort of started to think about some ways that we might be able to help them. But
I think maybe too, you know, somebody like McAdam or Kelty that are big versus the little guy that's one or two guys with a truck and some, not the big lawn mowers, but the little ones, you know, and a little bit of equipment. It's probably more of an issue for them, I'd guess.
I don't think the little guys, I think they have a cash issue, not like an income statement issue. So I the financial aspect is very apparent for the little guys.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Would there be any interest in proceeding with this initial attempt?
Yeah, I think we should try and come up with we had a proposal. Let's try a revised one and run it up the flagpole.
Would you consider the license fee, waiving the license fee?
And I think that's a good idea. Okay, so yeah, I don't know what the
do you want me to read? Do you want to restate it?
So yeah, I think I've got. I'm just checking my notes here. So, waiver of a license fee for commitment to within that coming year of the renewal, transition to electric powered leaf blower use. If they're found by the end of that year to not be compliant, the fine is double the license fee. And then also create a website for those companies who have transitioned and have provided proof of use of gas powered leaf or electric powered leaf blowers in the village. Those will be listed on a website, on a section of the village website that basically designates which landscape contractors in the village use electric powered leaf blowers for their work.
Okay. Curious, how much is the fee?
$125. And then it's everything. So like for whatever sort of contractor you are, it's per thing you do. So if there's somebody who's like a carpenter and an electrician, that's $125 for each. The one that we do have combined, if for like $187, is the landscape snow removal.
So maybe like knock $125 off off of that or something like that. Yeah.
So they would get a very discounted snow removal license.
It's just a first step. And I think it's better than just saying, throwing up in our hands and saying like, okay, there's nothing we can do. And then we work towards, you know, having the other locally based group I would include is Hulen. Did you hear back from them? HULEN?
I have not.
Okay. Cause that's also a resident owned for at least medium sized landscapers. So I think we could at least reach out to them to include them.
And then did we want to include anything with the seasonal or the
noise
level during the seasonal? How did we want to?
Yeah. Are we still allowing gas in the fall and electric during the rest of the year? Or
yeah, I think that we need to draft up a bit of a plan, if you would, that talks about what this stuff is. Because the first thing I think about when we say, okay, we're going to give somebody this or that, they meet a standard. Okay, what's the operative definition of that? Can't help it. That's just how I think. And it's something that you can either say, yes, it is, or no, it's not. And very clear. So what is the operative definition of they're all electric? I mean, is it within the 24 months? Is it within the summer months? What is it? And those types of things. So I just think we need to, from our own standpoint, take a couple steps back. We're going to take a lot of time back and just draft some things up that we can then say, yeah, that kind of fits what our thinking is at this point in time. And then we have something that tangible that you can reach out to these people and say, hey, what do you think about this? You know, how would this work for you? All right. And we're going to push them. We got to push it. It's not like you know, otherwise you're not getting done. There has to be a certain amount of urgency that goes along with it, but there needs to also be some basic practicality. And I always say that a little bit tongue in cheek, because I mean, I came from environment. Practicality is defined in seconds and minutes, not days, weeks, months, and years. So, but it needs to be something that isn't going to create hostile environment and companies go out of business or whatever. So I just think we need to do that. And that also gives us an opportunity, as you're doing that, you can help educate the general community and help enlist their support too. So that's just my thinking is, you know, I would suggest we take what Susan has started there and put a little bit more meat definitions to it. So this is what it means, and we can agree to all that. And then we got something we can go start to go forward with.
Okay, so you don't think we're ready to vote? You don't think we're ready to vote on this issue?
I don't know. I would say I couldn't vote on it because I don't know exactly what I'm voting on, because it's not defined what it means to meet. I agree that those concepts are good things. But before we can say, yeah, let's push that out, to me, what does it mean?
So would you be willing to take this and run with it and come back with a...
I think a couple people should do it. Yeah, I'd be happy to work on it.
And then should we plan just to have sort of a, for lack of a better term, markup session on this, so to speak, next month, and sort of work through, clear up the definitions, any time frames, how to factor in the seasonal provisions of it?
Well, we had a write-up for the original one, didn't we?
Yes, yeah. I had
so take that and alter it with these changes. I mean, we're not starting from scratch.
Well, but it's a completely different issue, because with an ordinance, you know, you need legal and everything to, you know, to waive a fee. I think the board just needs to vote on that. Right?
Yeah, that would need to be waived. And I think that would need, I'll need to look at the village code for, like, if the contractor fee is established in village code and how that.
Yeah. So maybe you could just do some research on how we would go about doing that. And then we'll revisit it.
Yeah. And I think other important note is we should also continue to inform the contractors, share the new language with them once it's mostly baked, so to speak, and then offer them a chance for any additional feedback input. As we've seen from the comments, and, you know, as Jeff pointed out, a lot of them are just sort of generally skeptical of the transition. But if I think some of them can find this more workable, that might be just a good step in the right direction. And those who, at least with this, don't want to.
Yeah, it's their choice.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think they say it comes down to cost, but if you're losing clients because clients are wanting something, that's going to be a loss of revenue as well. So they have to make a decision about when those offset each other.
Well, and it's okay for some companies to say, well, we just stopped doing business in Oak Park. But as this becomes more commonplace, at some point you can't keep just not doing business in those municipalities. Mm-hmm. Then you're facing the reality of being out of business.
Yeah. And I think they would feel it right away. I mean, because if people contacted them and say, you know, we're dropping you because we're going for someone that uses electric, that would be immediate feedback.
Oh, I wasn't even thinking about that angle of it. Oh, that's, yeah, you know, that's a good one, especially if they have choices now.
Right.
But,
and if they're able to identify them.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I like that idea very
and
much.
And, you know, I just don't think we need as much feedback on something like this because we're not telling them you have to do this. It's just like we have this special incentive and we are inviting you to be part of it. But I don't, you know.
Share the language. Let them know when the next commission meeting is.
Yeah. Just say this is the direction that we're going in. But I would also, you know, I would also say, you know, we're not dropping this. We're pushing this out into the future.
But Seth, I'd also personally like to have something in hand if somebody mentioned, maybe the last meeting, a survey of the residents. It'd be nice to know what they're saying so that a lot of the looks were saying, you guys are a bunch of dreamers. Why are you pushing this? Doesn't make any sense. But if it becomes more of a community-based want, that gives us a lot of leverage as well. And even though surveys are historically bad, you get 20%. But if 20% are all for it, then that's what we look for.
I would just say if we are going to do a survey, I think if we're going to reach out, it would be our opportunity to ask. And, you know, other things have come up about, like, you know, do backyard composting and everything. I think we should pull those together so that there's more richness to our data and not just. And I think more people are likely to respond because the more items you have, the more things they might resonate with. But again, I mean, people having a way to find, you know, if there's interest, it's just built in. So that's much less work for us. It's just putting it out there, but, you know, directing people to it and saying, if you're interested in this, don't answer a survey, but, you know, go and act on it. But I'm not opposed to a survey. I just think we should think it through and incorporate, you know, think about all the things we would like to get feedback on.
I agree. I like the idea of building other things into the survey other than just one subject. I think you might get, you know, everybody's got their thing, or maybe they don't, but people that have a thing, you know, their things may be different. Somebody may be, compost may be their thing, or the noise level of the blowers or whatever. So I think we definitely ought to cover multiple subjects.
I think we should move on because we still have a packed agenda. And okay, so we'll.
Yeah, so I will start working on a rough draft for the incentive provisions, and then we can, I'll share that with the contractors, let them know we plan to discuss the next meeting, and then we can make any sort of changes and clarifications to the definitions, make sure it's more clear. We develop a sort of more clear time frame, any sort of incorporation of the seasonal aspects, that'll all be next meeting.
Well, I'm happy to sit down with you, Seth, to pull out awesome. Something together and
yeah, that sounds great.
All right. Push out some times and dates and come up here.
Perfect. Awesome. All right. Next item of business. So just didn't want to lose sight of the UIC climate action plans that were completed for us this spring. This was presented to the board back in May. I know we briefly touched base on this also in May. And then obviously last month was a very packed agenda. I sent everyone the links to it. I've got the hard copies of each one here. If I can pass them around if anyone wants them.
You know what I would like? Yeah. Because you can't download them.
It's so big of a file. And I've tried to like download them and email them out and it just doesn't even fit in email.
I can probably make them smaller.
Those two copies, just one each. Yep. Yes.
Seth, yep. There's software that can reduce the size of PDFs and they can probably be zipped. I can work with you probably to get the file size smaller because at least if they put it somewhere where you could download it without having to open an account.
Yeah.
See, I thought that was a little.
Yeah, and I had tried to just compress it into a zip drive, and it barely did it. So,
yeah, you do.
It asked me because I did it here, but then I went and it just redid it.
Well, it asked me to sign in, so.
I'm like, I didn't.
I'll try it again, but it didn't let me do it.
And then I had also shared with everyone a spreadsheet I had put together where I just sort of, there was two sheets of it, two sheets within the spreadsheet that just sort of listed out each action item within the two reports.
I think,
and then I had sort of left some columns for people to take notes if anyone did. I did have the status Dropbox that I created, really gave four options there. One of the things Gary had raised was identifying the sort of quick wins that could be quickly, easily implemented. We had discussed finding ways to just incorporate sustainability more generally into village operations itself and any of these action items that might relate well to that. And then noted things that village was basically already doing or implemented, and then none of the above for things that may not warrant immediate consideration, so to speak. So just wanted to open it up from there, see what your all thoughts were and where to begin.
Well, the thing that struck me was the idea of engagement and education. And as I was saying before the meeting, I was actually talking with our library director about the idea of programs at the library in conjunction with, and you know how they'll have a display of books because it's Women's Month, or, you know, whatever, there'll be some particular topic. They could do a display of books that would relate to whatever we were doing, maybe sustainability in general. And incidentally, I just finished reading a book that I think everybody should read. I don't know if any of you heard a review on NPR with a gentleman named Goodall. And the book is, How the Heat is Gonna Kill You First. I'm not sure I'm saying the title exactly correctly, but talking about heat and its effect. And every chapter in the book is a different horror story. And it's, I hate to say it's very entertaining because it's a grim subject, but the man, you know.
The heat will kill you first.
Yes.
That's by Jeff. It. Jeff.
Yeah.
Goodall.
Yeah. That's, and I'm thinking that that would be, you know, how they do one book and everybody reads it. The Chicago libraries did that, and various organizations have done that. I'm thinking maybe the library might do something like that. That book in particular would be excellent, and get a discussion group going, whatever. But I think working with the library on some programs, it'd be a great idea, depending what we want to emphasize and what subject. Susan had mentioned doing a cooking demonstration with a single burner portable induction burner to show people what that's like. I'd have to think about what I could cook, but yeah.
I mean, they have cooking programs in there. I wasn't saying like we would cook it. I just, you know, just kind of.
Well, it might be good if, you know, one of us actually did it, you know, kind of put your money where your mouth is. It's something that we could pass around samples of, perhaps.
I don't know how financially feasible this is, but the bus shelters, I think, are something that we can definitely improve on. We were walking in and I was thinking about, it was raining, and how every time it rains, I live two blocks from my house, but I drive because I don't want to get wet. So I'm sure others don't want to take the bus when it's raining, but if we had shelters, I would assume that more people would, you know, use public transportation if there is, you know, some type of shelter because of my personal habits. I don't know how, again, financially feasible that is, but I think it's definitely something that we can improve on within the village.
Yeah, I think there would obviously be some sort of cost to it. There would be some coordination with PACE that we would need to do. It is something planned, at least for North Avenue. We're doing some streetscape improvements up there. It's supposed to be, knock on wood, all funded by the state through an earmark. And so it's us and Elmwood Park are currently in just the phase one engineering of that. But that was part of the early design stuff for that. But I know the other bus routes, so Lake Street, Harlem Avenue and then Madison Street, correct, are the only other bus routes in town. Those would all need similar plans going forward. And that was one of the things actually raised by one of the trustees. So I think there would be probably some board interest in making that an early focus as well.
Good. The other thing that I just, the other one was the, where is it? It was like the bike weatherized parking. I think Oak Park has them. So it's like a shelter for bikes. I think it's by the L in the metro station in Oak Park. I never see any bikes in it ever. Is anybody else? I think that's a waste of money. So I think we should cross that one off the list.
But I know what you're talking about. I've never seen anything.
So there's like there, there. I think it's a shelter. I think it's by the, what is that, North Boulevard? I think it has a shelter over bike racks.
And yeah, never by Marion and North Boulevard.
I've never seen any bikes ever there. But I don't know.
Well, back to the survey, maybe one of the survey questions could be, what would make public transportation more attractive to you? What could we do to get you to, or if you don't take it, why don't you, you know? Something on that order.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. When I was reading through it the first time, is there's a whole bunch of, and to both yours and Susan's point on a survey, you know, picking some of these out and adding them into that to get some feedback to help determine whether or not you really need it or not. I mean, there's many, many, many bike racks around this community, and other than up at the middle school, I tend not to see them used very often. So, but asking people on some of these, maybe that we consider a little bit more near and dear, you know, like what would help you, what kind of education formats and those kinds of things. I wouldn't overdo it. I went on a 20-page survey, but, you know, pick out maybe like the top five or six along with the one we just discussed and put those into a survey to help guide some of what we do. And just as importantly, how would we do it? You say you want to educate people, but how do they want to do that?
Well, yes, I agree, because we could pick out the actions that would have the most benefit, but if they're the things that people would be least likely to do, or least likely to do unless we can incentivize them or educate them or make it feasible, then it, you know, it may be the best idea, but if it isn't done, what good does it do if they won't go along with it?
I can offer up to write a prelim survey, and then I can bring it back and you guys can red pen it. If anybody has any specific questions or items of discussion that you want me to put on it, you can send me a note.
I second that.
what of the things that they recommend do we think we'd like to do? I mean, I think that would drive maybe the questions.
Well, we have one about electric leaf blowers. You know, if you were to form that into a question, maybe, you know, would you be more likely to hire a landscaper who used quieter electric powered leaf blowers?
So noise pollution is part of our scope.
We can ask people anything. If our, you know, our range is going to be sustainability, but if what's driving concern is noise, then I think we can. And then I'm always wondering about backyard composting and also, I guess, also vermiculture. Vermiculture? Worms?
Well, and
V-E-R-M-I-C culture.
I think, yeah, but I don't think you could use the word because I don't think people are going to know what it is. Yeah.
But I mean, if people have worms, they probably know what vermiculture is. But okay, I agree.
Yeah. And a question about public transportation. I'm not exactly sure the best way, whether we say what would make it more attractive or.
Maybe under that one, maybe we could have choices. You know, like, would any of the following make you more likely to? And then maybe that would be one. And then another question would be like, you know, sort of what keeps you from using public transportation? Yeah. So ask a tight question and then a more open-ended question.
Yeah, I was going to suggest some of the electrification things that they mentioned or things we've talked about in the past, and maybe asking if you switch to induction or if you switch to heat pumps, or if you switch to an EV, or like, I guess that's a question, but then also maybe forward looking of like, would you anticipate doing this? So you get a sense of like, maybe where, if people kind of where we could focus some of our attention.
And if not, why not, perhaps?
Yeah.
It's a two part question, because if the reason is because electric cars are too expensive or whatever, you know, it'd be good to understand what the, to your point, what the impediments are, you know.
I have another EV question. This is a little bit of a deeper dive, but if I mean, I feel like we don't do a survey very often, so like this is our chance to get information. So I had this thought that, you know, we're looking at like the numbers of EVs relative like total registered cars and everything, but that's not the full picture. What you really want is you want the people who use the most mileage to be switching over to EVs, and they're the people that have the biggest incentive. You know, the people that drive, you know, 500 miles a year don't really have a huge incentive to, so not 5,000. So I wonder if we could get a question at, you know, EV owners, like, you know, what is your average mileage per month? You know, and then we could make, just draw some conclusions from that and statistics about, because I'm sure we have like sort of more overall, I think we can get information on like sort of overall mileage, because yeah. I've seen that on things.
CMAP has the overall
mileage. CMAP is overall. So then we can get an idea, like, you know, are people who are early adapters or VVs, are they people that have higher, you know, like they have longer commutes and higher mileage? And because I think that paints a very different picture of, you know, if like the 10% that have the highest mileage are adopting EVs, that's totally different than 10% across the thing. So I really understand that's a deeper dive, but it was just a question. So,
well, just to throw something out there, are there enough things that you would want to query EV and hybrid owners to justify a separate survey just to them? Is that anything that would be of interest? I don't know if we have enough.
Well, maybe, questions. But this could be a first pass. I mean, I just feel like this is a real opportunity, and people that don't have an EV will just skip over that question. So it's a first pass. But yeah, that could be a future.
And we could also have sections, you know, like the natural environment and EV, you know, so we can break it
if
up.
It's too long, though, people aren't going to fill it
yeah,
out. So
you got to be short.
But I'd ask us to think about what is it we want to learn and why. I mean, you get all kinds of fun facts, right? But the question I'm, the reason I would want to do the survey, which is why I started it, is to get community opinion on the relative importance of the electric leaf blower.
Yes, exactly.
And nothing else. I mean, that's to me what that output needs to be. Are they supportive or are they not supportive? Because they're not supportive of it, then it's going to be a tough sell. And so that's how I look at all these things. So if we're going to put time and effort into something, it should be something that the community values as important to do. That would be my opinion. So all the questions would need to be targeted that way. Just to gather information for the sake of information, that's a whole different set of surveys, in my opinion.
Well, I agree. I think it helps us figure out where to focus and where we're the most likely to be successful.
That's just my opinion. Other people have other questions.
Perfect. I'll get a draft. Maybe I can send one to you and you can maybe distribute it.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think... is this something that she could send to us as long as we're responding back to her individually?
You can email individually with any one.
We don't have everybody's email.
Yeah.
So. You can get that from Seth, but just put them in the blind copy so nobody automatically hits respond all. And we can get feedback to you as long as we are not talking amongst ourselves.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, so you respond to me and then I can make adjustments.
Two individuals other than me can communicate. If it's once it's three of you all talking Sustainability Commission business, that's the Open Meetings Act issue. Yeah. So
do you have to be
copied? I don't have to be copied. Okay. I can also be included because I'm just the staff liaison. So if there's anything you need,
he doesn't count.
Village assistance. I don't count. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
But it's just a way for us to move things, especially like, you know, seeing as we're headed into August and people could be like. I think these are all good ideas, but I'm just also trying to think of, you know, how we wrap our minds around this whole thing. So I think a survey is a good start, but does anybody have any other thoughts about that?
Well, since I'm always hammering on the communication angle, that seems to be my thing. I'd be interested to know if there are specific topics that you think would be, that anybody thinks would be good for a program at the library, or, you know, whether it's a presentation or it's a town hall and having a discussion, or it's a collection of books that they do a display on to support a program. Any thoughts on what you think might be of interest, might be useful?
One, just throwing this out there, feel free to jump in, but one potential could be, like, you know, both of these listed off several things of just providing information hubs or sharing resources on whether it's native planting or electrification. And maybe just having one survey is like, would you be interested in, and then check all that apply. And then just basically cherry pick some of the general topics from these two reports.
Yeah. Like very often when you fill something out, they'll say, would you like more information? Check, you know, which things we can send you more information on. Usually it's somebody trying to sell you something, but that's a good idea.
No, I think as every month we get together, you always have a lot of, it's always something, there's always new, and you always bring a lot of good ideas. And I you mentioned that book, right? So, you know, sometimes look up here to listen to an author. So, you know, those types of things may be helpful too, not just putting books out, but having an author come and,
well, I don't know if we could get that gentleman or not. If we could, it'd be great. But if not, as I was reading this, so about the only time I have to read is in the evening. I'll tuck myself in bed and read before I go to sleep. And my husband will be reading or playing on his tablet. And every once in a while, one of us will stop and read something out loud that we're reading. And I found myself reading sections of it to him. And wanting to go back and note those pages, because I wanted to take those quotes out and save them, because they were little gems. You didn't even have to read the whole chapter, but so I was thinking about, even if we couldn't get the author in to do it, that I'd be willing to do something like that. I think that'd be great.
Like a book review or something like that? Would that be good for your column at the Wednesday Journal?
Oh, I'm a little annoyed with them. They are not publishing things anymore. They just decided to leave me out in the breezes there. But I was thinking, you know, how you'll have authors do readings. There are several things in that book, little sections that stand out by themselves, where you don't need to have read the whole chapter to get something out of it. There's nuggets in there. And I was thinking about, how could I organize that into a nugget presentation? And I don't know about getting everybody to read it and having a discussion, but I definitely think something like that would be worthwhile.
I think it's a good idea. I like the idea just of, I think it's a different audience than maybe we sometimes reach, just that are, you know, they might be going in with little kids or whoever, a lot of people use the library, a lot of different people. So if there are like way, even if it's not something as ambitious as like a book reading, just even having some information, if we have a initiative that we're kind of trying to get more attention to, maybe working with them to provide more information on the topic and just raise awareness.
Well, I mean, we've got student commissioners, well, one now, and I assume we'll get another one.
Currently, we have none, because Manolo's he's a full board member now.
AJ is still a student.
Oh, AJ's still.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if he graduated or not. But the environmental club at the high school, maybe we could I don't know what exactly, but do something with them.
Yep. Manolo, as the former president of the environmental club at the high school.
Yeah. I feel like they would definitely be interested. Luis, I'm kind like, what are you thinking? I'm trying to figure out like how we can engage them. And like, it would be cool if the public was also involved, but yeah.
Yes. That's exactly what I was thinking. I mean, for instance, if there's some program or something we might do at the library, maybe we could do it jointly with the environmental club or have some of their members present and participate in some way. I don't know what exactly, and I'll give it some thought, but.
I think Concordia has a green club too, and they charge every student $5 to help fund some green project every year. So if you have a meeting or something, it would be nice to get potentially the university involved.
I like that. Yeah. 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 Because I like the idea of getting a diversity of age groups. And Jeff, your point about the library, maybe there's something we can do that's for parents and their kids. You know, I mean, I know there's things that are going on in the schools around whether it's recycling or other kinds of things. Because the library certainly does a lot of programs for children. Mm-hmm. And maybe we can incorporate something into one of those programs. And maybe the director will have some ideas. So I had broached the subject to her when I spoke to her yesterday on a different subject, and I'm going to get together and just chat with her and see what she thinks, you know. Needs more forming here. It's just an amorphous idea.
Yeah, like inviting different organizations to like a book reading or like an activity that different organizations, like environmental organizations or like Indivisible Oak Park, having something, but also reaching out to organizations.
Well, I like the idea of drawing people's attention to the fact that these organizations exist. I mean, Concordia, that's interesting. I didn't know that. And people that don't have kids in high school might not know that there's an environmental club over there. I didn't know until Manolo, learned it by way of him.
Do we have any more thoughts, input on this? So just baseline assessment is generally going to start to put together a survey. Jamie's going to put that together, reach out to all of you for your individual feedback, potential questions on electric leaf blower use, backyard composting, a couple of ones on public transportation, one that's just more open-ended about what's keeping individuals from using it. Question inquiring about electrification adoption, induction stoves, heat pumps, EVs, potentially about EV mileage to get a better measure of that. And then in order to best target what are sort of the priorities and interests of the community, utilizing some of these report suggestions about providing information on various topics and seeing what has the most interest from the public to then develop something that way. Did I capture everything? And then obviously there will be going forward developing that into some sort of communications component of having these events, targeting these sort of things to what has broader community interest, so to speak, and connecting individuals, various organizations, going forward from there.
Do we want a question about the newsletter? I realize the whole newsletter is not sustainability, but there, but every newsletter has a sustainable topic. Would we be curious to know whether or not, I mean, we know how many people are enrolled, how many email addresses are enrolled. So maybe that's not a useful question.
We could ask them what issues they'd like to see in our, you know, an upcoming newsletter. What,
yeah, I think that's a better question.
Sustainable issues you'd like to see in upcoming newsletter.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that'd be a good question.
Do we have flexibility on how we disseminate that? If we asked, like, what would you use social media to follow?
That's kind of what I was going to think. You should, you know, how do you get your sustainability news? Newsletter, Instagram.
Most of the topics do appear on their Instagram. Mm-hmm. I don't know about LinkedIn, but Instagram and
everything on the newsletter at some point gets posted on the Facebook and Instagram pages. It's usually the same topic. When the weeks of the monthly newsletter, it's either something slightly different or a hard down version of the monthly article.
Seth, while you're doing that, what's the method for putting out a survey like this? Is it a hard copy?
So we have a Village SurveyMonkey account. So I could just easily create it in there once we have everything finalized. We've created surveys, obviously, this survey from the contractors. We had a similar survey for food establishments when we were doing the styrofoam. And I believe even before that, the single-use plastic ordinances. And then every spring, for those of you who are in the compost program, you receive a survey link for if you want to sign up for compost delivery. So, yeah, we put that out electronically. It can be done by hyperlink. We can include it in the newsletters. So, yeah, there's, yeah, several sort of electronic ways to disseminate it.
And just the typical, like, fields, like ranking, check marks, boxes. Like, I don't, text boxes. There's any type of question.
Any type of question format. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So you've got a question that they only answer if they answer the previous question, because I've used the tools too. Yeah. It's pretty sophisticated. But yeah, you can do check multiple things or radio monthly. And also whether or not questions are required, not required.
Seth, has these results been shared with the village, like in terms of, you know, as you said, some of these are things that could be implemented by the village. Has it been shared, or is there a way to share this with the various, I imagine most of them will be public works, but.
In terms of the village staff?
Yeah.
To some extent, yes. Have not gotten into, like, raw detail with the various items in the things. I mean, Matt has reviewed them, or senior staff have reviewed them, but I don't think I've had, like, deep conversations with, like, our public works staff beyond, like, oh, hey, Brian might need your input on expanding the tree page website. I know that was one of the suggestions. He's one of our arborists on staff. So just things like that, I've just sort of put on the radar of our staff, but beyond more sort of high level discussions between Matt, myself, Jack, our public works director, there's not really been much beyond that at this point. So I wanted to sort of get all of your feedback on which sort of items should be the initial focus and then go from there.
Is that something that they would be better suited to do than, you know, than us coming in from the outside? First of all, like, I didn't know until we had that conversation that that the village was adapting as they purchase the electric equipment. So, maybe just even like more feedback within us in terms of.
Yeah. So that will be one of my things for the next month then, is to just sort of get more feedback and input. And I know, Matt and I have taken a pass through, and some of these have been sort of realize they're not feasible at all, whether it be issues of public appetite for them or just feasibility to actually implement. Like, you know, I know, I think one of them had even suggested a carbon tax. So, you know, really effective at reducing carbon emissions, impossible to implement at a local level.
At the local level, absolutely. Yeah.
But yeah, I can.
But I'm just, you know, I it's not much of a suggestion. I'm just wondering, like, what is the best way to, you know, to further that within the different departments? And and, you know, I don't know, maybe a type of survey there also is, you know, is appropriate in terms of, like, you know, among these things, what, you know, what do you think is something feasible, and which ones are, you know, completely not feasible.
And is the intent to kind of take the best of these items and kind of combine them and roll them out to the community as like a, I think we talked about that previously. Is that still the
intent? I think that would be the goal. I think that would be the interest of the board as well, as to see some of the things from these reports taken and then put into action, and just sort of, yeah, assessing what's the best, what would have the most impact and interest from the community, I think is a good starting place for that approach.
And are you going to make those presentations available for all of the Village of River Forest, like a link to them on the website at all? Or
yes, I'm
going to do the watered down version.
No, I should do that. Yeah, I can get that up there at least. Noting, you know, explaining these aren't sort of official village documents, I think is an important way to preface it, but that this is what was put forward to the community from UIC this spring.
I mean, I feel like this is an issue we're going to have to keep returning to. So, you know, maybe even like it becomes almost a standing item until we really get a handle on it. So, you know, maybe it's just something that shows up for the next several months and we just sort of note our progress and, you know, maybe continue to think about how do we, because it's just sort of daunting to look at the whole thing and say, where do we start?
And there's every section and every piece, like you mentioned, I don't know, you know, the village side or capabilities.
Yeah.
So it's hard for me to answer, you know, oh, this sounds great, but can we really do this?
Even yeah,
like so the tree canopy, that's a great idea, but I don't know how many more trees we can plant.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
in terms of, you know, what we as the village property have, we have the parkways and, you know, it's,
well, and trees have to be a certain distance apart.
Yeah, as covered as it can be. And, you know, some of you can see some streets that were really hit by Dutch elm and emerald ash borer. And, you know, one side of a street, it's just all younger trees, and see what happens as a result of that. But yeah.
That's why, Seth, I'm certain you're going to. You want to be careful about just putting that thing out there as is, because somebody would say, hey, you know, that. You know, the high thinkers at the university said this is what you should be doing. You should be subsidizing this and subsidizing that, and so I'd be a little bit cautious on putting that thing out in its entirety.
Or the flip side, that they go, oh, this is just so academic, and then discount the entire thing, you know, when there may be some good meat there. Because I think it's all well-meaning. Some of it is idealistic. But that doesn't mean you might not be able to extract something out of even the idealistic ideas and do something with them.
Category is great.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything that we haven't put any thought into. I mean, I think we, you know, sometimes we spin our wheels in terms of how can we push this, but did anybody notice something that's like totally off our radar altogether?
No. And maybe that's good. Maybe it confirms that, you know, we're all thinking about the right stuff.
I mean, we don't talk a lot about public transportation, but I just feel like in River Forest, I mean, people know it's available, and that's a hard one.
Well, and if we're trying to concentrate on things within the village, you don't, you know, you aren't thinking about, well, they're traveling somewhere else. You know, I find myself kind of thinking about within the boundaries. And I guess that's probably why I don't think about the transportation too much. Well, being retired, you know, I don't go too many places. So I'm not a traveler, so.
All right, any more comments or should we move on? Move on, let's move on.
Just to quickly touch base for other business, I'm going to share here. Editorial calendar, I haven't quite fully updated this. I'm shifting all of these back for the weekly one. Luis, it's okay. The AA. Updated time when I was going to run the pollinators this week, that'll run next week, lawn watering week after, and then energy assessment reuse. These are mostly just reusing previous articles, sort of noted typical things that come up seasonally going forward. Luis has provided a bunch of future ones for fodder. And then what was the one this week? Is the give something away?
Yes.
Day.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what I did. I tripped over a site that has all the obscure days, like, you know, National Give Something Away Day. That was one. And I thought, okay, what I was doing was looking for days that we could tie a topic to. Now, the refill day, you know, take your cup to Starbucks and have them use your cup, that kind of thing. Okay, that one was obvious. But Give Something Away Day, I tied that to donating things to the brown elephant or the economy, you know, reuse. Recycling's good, reuse is even better, that kind of theme. So what I was doing was looking through, and there's hundreds of, some of them are just, you know, goofy. But there's hundreds of national days. So I'm going through the calendars and looking for ones that we can tie something sustainable to. Because I think that kind of works for people, you know, whether it be Earth Day or something else. So
I was also wondering, so I received, hopefully everybody received the postcard from LRS about recycling. And I thought maybe we could just back that up. I don't know if you have a spot in a newsletter, but at least on the like at least on the social media, because it just seems when you hit somebody with a pow pow, then they might be like, oh yeah, I got that card, I forgot to read it. But so I don't know if there's a way to reproduce the card on social media or even in one of the newsletters. But
I've got a whole stack of extra ones upstairs, so I put them out on the front desk upstairs with everything. And so yeah, I can
just
very easily scan it and get it up.
You could just make reference to it, you know, you should have received this. And did you receive it in the multi-use buildings, the multi-unit buildings? You didn't get the card?
No.
Because you're not on the mesh service. Yeah. Oh, and since we're talking about LRLs, can I pass along to you a comment that I've gotten from, or question I've gotten from a couple of people, which is, so we've received feedback that the compostable cups and things that people are using are not actually compostable in our compost program.
I have heard this before. So there are two codes for compostable material, and the compost facility that LRS uses only accepts one of those two. And it's the one specified in our contract. I can...
We need to get that information out to people because, you know, people are spending good money to, and that's question one. And question two is, if the other number is showing up in our compost, how is that handled? So does that compromise the compost and the whole thing is thrown out, or do they have a way to get it out at the source?
Let me look into that, because I know there is some sort of, and I had some call and they sort of went through this, may have been a Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus thing with the compost facility that the village's stuff it actually gets brought to, because they were talking about Chicago's drop-off food scrap program and how they sorted through the contamination of that. So there is some sort of
you mean how they dealt with it?
yeah, how they dealt with it. And so there is some sort of process there to sort of try and limit or separate the contamination before it goes in with everything else. I just don't exactly know how it's handled.
You just, as I said, I've had a couple of questions about that. And also people wanting guidance, like if they're going out and buying things, they want to make sure they're buying the right thing.
Maybe if that's of enough concern, we could use that for one of the weekly messages to clarify that. Yeah.
Once we get the information.
Once we know what the answer is, yeah. Yes. When does the monthly letter come out?
First Friday of every month.
Oh, first Friday. Okay.
So I think what I had planned for this next month was just a reuse of just plugging the website. But if we've got a longer one we want to use, whether it be combining the recycling and the what can be composted or anything else you all have, let me know.
And how long can that one?
350.
350? Okay.
Yep.
Because I've come up with a lot of short ones, but I don't know if I've got any long ones. And I've kind of lost track of which ones you've used. So
I've got that running spreadsheet.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I know the pollinator one I had queued up already. The other two I've just pushed for whenever we need to plug in one. I don't think either of those were time since it was rechargeable batteries. And then.
Oh, okay.
The cloth use one, right? The fashion one.
Oh, right. Yeah. Fast fashion. Right. Okay.
My niece was visiting and kept apologizing to me for ordering things through. Is it Sheen? Sheen or Shine? Do you know how you pronounce it?
I think it's Sheen.
What's that?
It's extremely fast fashion, very cheap fast fashion from China, uses very questionable labor practice as well to sell items for like $5 and $10.
Yeah. Well, and the articles I was reading that I gleaned the information from said two things about it, the point you just made, but then the fact that, you know, fast fashion is defined as something comes out on the runway and then all the imitators go and come out with a cheap version within like 2 weeks. That's why they call it fast fashion. Well, people that tend to buy that aren't going to tend to keep wearing it. You know, they'll wear it for one season or whatever. And the article was talking about if you even extend and keep something an extra 9 months, you know, how much water that saves, because they were talking specifically about the amount of water that's used in those businesses. But you've also got, you know, exploited laborers that are working for pennies and
near slave
things.
Labor.
Yeah.
Or, you know, virtually slave labor.
Yeah.
Just a couple quick items for everyone's update. I did include in the monthly report the quarterly EV information. I'm still playing around with the ChargePoint website to try and figure out the percentage of the time it's blocked by a charged vehicle. I can't quite figure out how to run that report yet, but once I figure that out, that will try to incorporate that in as well. You can see from the chart that I included that the fee system seems to be pretty effective. We did have a couple fairly long stays, but those seem to be few and far between now. So most individuals are right around that 2 hour mark and then moving on. So, and the total number of users and charging sessions does not appear to have fluctuated too greatly. So.
Is anybody keeping track of the revenue that it generates?
I can pull that in and see that.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to give it. The question is just to keep track of it.
I think the first time it came in, our assistant finance director came over to my office. Like, we just received $120 or something like that.
$20?
$120 or something like that. Charge one. Do you know what? I was like, this is the new fee. Just like, okay.
Is that monthly?
Yeah, I think it comes in at the end of every month. And so that was March. So that was the first 2 weeks or so.
Oh, okay. So that's not even a full month.
Yeah.
So maybe it's.
Is that going to Sustainability Commission budget? Is that really?
I will need to check and confirm that.
I would venture to say no, but anyway.
Have there been any more complaints or feedback from the public on this?
There have not. So, yeah, there was the one individual who was very displeased. There was another individual who wrote into the Wednesday Journal, yeah, also displeased.
Yeah,
I think free EV charging stations are disappearing. So it's a pretty hard argument to make at this point.
Yes. And then, and
so, I mean, someone who's using it for overnight parking, they don't have much moral ground to stand on.
Yeah. The only other issue I had was a couple of our firefighters have EVs, and one of them left it in there, went out on a call, and then hit the 2 hour mark. He got back shortly after, so he was able to unplug it, but just sort of
are we able to reimburse that? I mean,
So we've
I mean, I think that's a very reimbursable.
So I was able to work with them, figure that out. And so they will still get the sort of push notifications to remind them to go unplug their vehicle. And typically, if the two of them are on the same shift, only one of them is even plugged in at any time. And then they will move it after a couple hours anyway. So they were already very conscious of it.
Okay, good. They were not our target audience.
No.
I just wanted to also, you didn't talk about the commission, but I just wanted to talk about, I don't know if everybody got a chance to listen to the board meeting last night, but there were many, many agenda items. So the composting came up. There were a lot of questions about that. And I just listening, I'm not sure I made this comment in the meeting, but I just would like to make it now, which is that I think one of the benefits of having the cost sharing is that then we can lock that in as a possibility for, like, if we do go to opt out. So, like, so somebody could, even if participating, you know, it could be, well, at this point, something like $7.50 per month if they're sharing a smaller bin. But that when we go to negotiate, this is something that we could lock in, that we don't, you know, we don't need every individual household. So it's a way for people who want to participate but aren't ready, you know, to pay like $20 per month for this. That's one thing. But also, I think as a negotiating point, that we can negotiate the more bins that we already have out here, we can negotiate a better initial price with, you know. So one of the Trustee Brennan had a comment about sort of dinging us for not going out and asking LRS how much would this cost, but I don't think that that's a set fee. It's going to be based on their cost of implementing it, which the fewer bins we have is going to be a higher cost. That's going to be our base cost, and then that's going to go up 3% every year. So if we can negotiate a better, you know, if by delaying it by 1 year we can negotiate a better base price, then I think we can reduce the number of people who opt out based on cost, and so it puts us. So I'm not sure I ever articulated all of that, but you know, that was just something that occurred to me as I was listening to the arguments. And
And I did, just at board direction, they had asked this commission to continue discussing it, so I did reach out just to get some sort of idea, if CFLRS has what would be an initial pricing. I did do some quick research on when Oak Park's last contract came up. One of the things they had asked in their RFP was to provide what universal composting cost would be. I think they had quoted them $11 a month at the time, and $15 a month for the opt-out composting program in Oak Park. It's since gone up to, I believe, it's like $16.30 roughly.
So what's the 11?
That would have been the universal compost, and everyone gets a 32-35 gallon cart.
Okay. And then what's the second fee?
Their Oak Park's current opt-in program. Sorry, I might have misspoke there.
Okay. They also have different sizes available, I think, don't they?
They only have one 90, size. 95
gallon. Only one size. Okay. Yep. Okay. Okay. So $11.
Yep. And so this is couple years old data, only one source I was able to find. You know, when I had initially done the information I presented to you all back in May, I could not find what Highland Park or Deerfield, or there was one other community up north that had switched to this universal or opt out program. I could not find any pricing specific to.
And I believe Oak Park has a lower participation rate than us.
Is a total percentage of the community, I believe you're correct. But yeah, I have reached out to them. And then I know, so next month I will have just the general LRS waste report, and I've started to compile that data into more quarterly data. One of the things I believe that was asked at the board was if increased compost participation results in less landfill tonnage, so to speak. Just from the data we have, that does not appear to be the case. It's actually, and granted, this is sort of skewed by yard waste being included in the organics tonnage, but there's actually a slight positive correlation where once people are throwing, and this is monthly, so once people are throwing more things away, they're also composting more.
You know, I've sort of come around on yard waste because I first thought like, oh, this is yard waste. But then I find out people actually do put yard waste in their trash. So,
and you're right? Legally not supposed to do
really,
that.
Really?
But yeah, it's.
Okay. Yeah, but they do.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll have some information for you all to look at and then have that be part of the discussion next month as well.
I make motion to end the meeting. What I was saying. Oh no, Jamie has something.
I'm sorry. I have one comment. And I wasn't here last month, so my apologies. But Katie from LRS, I asked her about a tour, and she proposed two dates in October. So I'll send the email out with the two dates, and if you guys are willing and able, we're gonna tour one of LRS's facilities. And if you're available. And there's also a little link in there with a video explaining the facility. So I'll send it out to everybody and let me know if you're available, and I can email them back and let them know the headcount. Okay. Actually,
where are they?
Chicago. It says Chicago. I don't know the address. Sorry. I'll find
it. I thought they were in Maywood. No,
they have a transfer station in Maywood, but I think that's where it's just.
There
comes and then they take it
like a deep distribution center or something.
Also, before we close, we got very caught up in our goodbyes to Eric, and so I don't think we properly welcomed Ben. Would you like to just say a few words about your background and your interest in the commission?
Yeah, absolutely. So I found out about commission online, and a little bit about my background. So I currently work at Triton College as their sustainability coordinator. And so this opportunity, I'm really excited to, you know, kind of bring some of that experience and knowledge to my own community. I've lived here since I was like 9 or 10 years old. So I'm really excited about the opportunity to learn more and also implement some really fun and cool initiatives to the village. So thank you all very much for welcoming me here today. And yeah, excited.
Thank you. Manolo, are you still planning on going to Triton?
Yes, I am. I actually, Mr. Cadillac.
Manolo, you're still there? Are you muted?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
He is talking, but we can't hear him.
Yeah, I can see it lit up. But
oh, are you muted, Manolo?
No, I'm talking. Hello?
I'm sharing my laptop here and then the village computer there, but
you think it's just not coming through? All right, we'll have to get back to you on that. But I think Manolo was planning on going, so we have some synergies there with Triton College.
Yeah, well, be looking forward to that. Nice.
Yeah. All right, are there any other? I'm sorry, I should have asked if there were any other comments, questions before we draw this to a close. All right, motion to adjourn.
I second.
All right. Co-Chair Charette?
Yes.
Co-Chair Lennon?
Yes.
Commissioner Veazey?
Yes.
Commissioner Haley?
Yes.
Commissioner Mezzatesta?
Yes.
Commissioner Cadillac?
Yes.
All right. It is 8:34 and we are adjourned.